point a slam dunk, and we shouldn't be wasting any time, even talking about these kinds of issues. So they're going to fight back very hard, and they've got lots of money. They've got a political system that works, mostly in their favor. Occasionally there are breaks in that system. But we as a people can change things. It always starts with a handful and it grows poco a poco. That's how social change has happened historically. That's how it'll happen again. It won't come from the top. It has to come from the grassroots, from the bottom up.
Out Loud is retiring in June, but queer programming will continue on your community radio station. KBOO is proud of our longtime support of programming serving and featuring the area's queer community, and while we prepared to say goodbye to Out Loud, we welcome the opportunity for new programs to continue airing in Out Loud's time slot every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. More information is available on the KBOO website at kboo.fm/outloud.
Good morning. It is just 10 o'clock now, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Next up, we'll hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. Air Cascadia is off for the rest of the week. And at 11 on the Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter presents a recent talk by writer and visionary Susan Griffin on the shifts in Western culture needed for addressing climate change. Thanks, all you KBOO members, for your generous support in our recent spring membership drive. If you missed it, you can still become a member or renew by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. And now we have Flashpoints.
Flashpoints, we remember exalted singer, actor, political activist Paul Robeson, blacklisted in the 1950s after the Peekskill anti-communist riots in upstate New York. Also Noam Chomsky on the emerging framework of world power. And we feature our regular weekly broadcast of the Electronic Intifada with Nora Barris-Friedman. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Born on April 9th, 1898 in Princeton, New Jersey, Paul Robeson went on to become a stellar athlete and performing artist. He starred in both stage and film versions of The Emperor Jones and Showboat and established an immensely popular screen and singing career. Robeson briefly worked as a lawyer in 1923, but left after encountering severe racism at his firm. In 1924, Robeson returned to the stage and played the lead in the production of All God's Chillin' Got Wings, and the following year he starred in the London staging of The Emperor Jones, both by playwright Eugene O'Neill. Robeson also entered the film starring in an African-American production of Body and Soul in 1925. Robeson continued to make waves in London. In 1928, he starred in the stage version of Showboat, where he brought the house down with Old Man River, a song that would become his signature. Later, Robeson spoke out against racism and became a world activist and was ultimately blacklisted during the paranoia of the McCarthy era. In the 1950s. Here then, remembering Paul Robeson and Peekskill.
And a mighty fine idea.
Adopted unanimously in Congress, July 4th, 1776.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights,
that among Yes, sir.
Liberty.
That's right.
And the pursuit of happiness.
Is that what they say?
The very words.
That sure does sound mighty fine.
This is a story of Paul Robeson and the two Peekskills. The riots in concert at Peekskill, New York, 50 years ago, are almost unknown to Americans today. Paul Robeson, then among the most famous men in the world, is known now only to some. This is because of fear, blacklists, silence, and ignorance. Listen to the story so the Cold War spell can be broken. Paul Robeson had been an All-American football player and then valedictorian at Rutgers. He had performed in plays and movies from Othello to Showboat. But he was best known on all continents for his amazing, deep voice. Fred Hirsch and Ginny Muir, now Ginny Muir Hirsch, were among those lucky enough to have met Paul Robeson, and their stories tell what happened at Peekskill 50 years ago this summer.
I lived in Peekskill, or Mohegan Colony, 4 miles outside of Peekskill. And Robeson had given concerts in the Peekskill area several years previous to 1949. And when Robeson came to give concerts in the area, he stayed at our house. The first time I remember is knocking on the door, because that was where it was up close. And then he just filled the doorway. And was immediately an old friend by the time he got 3 or 4 steps into the house, because he was smiling and greeting everybody and shaking hands and hugging. This was his way of greeting people, was to become an old friend in a very few moments. I remember sitting on his lap at one point.
I remember that I saw him at a meeting where he walked in the room, and I had never seen a human being with that kind of stature. He was, you know, huge and had this beneficent smile, and he was very dark. And when he spoke at the microphone, it was like everybody in the room sort of moved back, because he had this incredible voice. You could feel the walls vibrate. It was an old hall. I remember knowing that he had been an All-American football player. And then he comes off as this gentle giant. He sang in every language, you know. It was just unbelievable. He was one of the most gracious people I've ever met in my life. I've just encompassed everybody.
Oh, at that time, he was, in my experience, he was the greatest hero that could walk. And in the country in general, he was very well renowned. I remember on the subway, seeing the ads for Robeson for Othello. And he was the best-known singer.
Well, he certainly was the best-known artist in our country.
No, he was probably better known in the rest of the world.
Robeson had increasingly used his amazing voice against racism. He spoke out in favor of independence for colonial nations in Africa, and he questioned black Americans fighting against the Soviet Union, where minorities were given full legal equality. At Peekskill, New York, in August 1949, there was to be a benefit concert for the Civil Rights Congress of Harlem. Several dozen locals, including veterans groups, who were against communism and civil rights, threatened violence in order to stop the concert. Knowing nothing of these threats, Ginny Muir had gone up from New York City for the day to help set up in the amphitheater. She had gone on a soda and chips run for the group.
By the time I got back to the entrance to this little amphitheater, you had to cross a little bridge. It was a gully, about 30-foot drop. And you crossed a little bridge, and then you had to park, because you didn't drive your car in, and they just surrounded me. They were yelling, they were drinking beer. It happened so quickly that I was just floored. I was very frightened. So I just sat in the car, and the sheriff stood right in front of the car. And it turned out he was the sheriff of the county. And he said, "Where do you think you're going?" And I said, "I'm going in there I have friends in there. I have, I'm their ride. We're having a picnic. And he said, and he sneered, he really sneered, and he said, you may get in, but you're not going to get out. Well, that frightened me. Meanwhile, they were sort of beginning to rock my car. And I put the car in gear. It was an old shift car, and I said, and I had the windows up, and it was sweltering, but I had the window cracked about 2 inches on the driver's side, and I just said, you better watch out. I'm coming through. And I put the car in first gear, and I just started to inch, and they did move, you know, slowly move back. And I drove over this little bridge and parked my car and ran like hell down the hill into the amphitheater.
The mob-like name-calling protesters blocked cars headed into the amphitheater. Robeson's friends, who had picked him up at the train station, took him to a nearby house for safety. Meanwhile, those setting up were trapped inside the amphitheater.
I began to get quite frightened. I realized this was not just a small bunch of people. This was a large group. As it began to get dark, some guys came in with great big bats or sticks or something and began knocking at the stage and started to push over the chairs that we had set up so neatly. We heard this banging, and then as the sun really started to go down and no other people were coming, which was another frightening thing, I had gone back to my car and gotten the tire iron because I had a big skirt with big deep pockets, one of those 50s, 49 whatever skirts, and had put this tire iron in my pocket. Then the cops didn't come, and we went and called again. I went and called. The farmer was by this time pretty upset, to say the least, and he said, I think you folks better stick together down there while we see if we can get help. So I called, and they said, yes, ma'am, that's all they said. And we called, I think, probably 6 times, without any response whatsoever. Obviously, the crowd swelled because you could hear, you know, at night in the country, you can hear voices, and began to get pretty menacing. And it just, the time seems interminable, but as it was getting dark, this young man came down the hill. He had come in from one of the outlying areas, and his head was totally bloody, and he was staggering. And his head was bleeding, so we put him down, and I put his head in my lap because I had this big skirt. And then 2 crosses were set on fire on the hills. And then I knew we were really in trouble. Well, we heard car motors out on the road, but they didn't come in. No one came in. And then they set the stage on fire. And they piled up some of the chairs and set them on fire. So we were like huddled by this little pond, and they were over there. They didn't come after us. They just wanted to stop the thing. You know, your anger rises as you realize that no one is coming to help you, that there is no help in sight, and what's going to happen to you. The troopers came in at 2 in the morning. The cops came in, and we were told that we were being escorted out. And as I was escorted out with 2 or 3 other people, I didn't see my car because it wasn't there. And somebody said, look at that car. And there was my car upside down this 30-foot drop. The state police people came from the community, including Camp Unity, which was a progressive camp up there. They came with a bus and were escorted by the police with a bus. And they took those of us who were in there to 2 places, and I went to Camp Unity, where then people drove us into the city. And I just remember being so exhausted. It was like 4 in the morning, you know, 5 in the morning. I'd been up since 5 the morning before, and the emotional drain was such that I was not much aware about anything that was going on, except as I drove, I have to tell you, I got angrier and angrier.
Robeson returned to New York City, as did Ginny, who went straight to the Civil Rights Congress office because she was angry that the volunteers had not been told of possible danger.
So when I was brought back to New York, I went right to the Civil Rights Congress office. And it was like 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning, Sunday morning. It was hot. And I had this blood-stained skirt on. It was just stiff, you know, with blood. And I was dirty and tired. But I was mad. I was really mad. And I went into the office and started sort of blathering at them. And the guy said, here's some cab fare. Go down to the Hotel Lincoln, or one of the old hotels in New York that had a big room. And I said, why? And they said, Robeson's having a press conference, and you're the first person to make it out to come back. Well, I went there because I was mad at them and wanted to say, how dare you not tell people that this was... They had just totally underestimated the enemy, as it were. So I got taken down to this press conference and walked in, and Robeson wasn't there yet, and here was this giant room full of, oh, I'd say maybe 80 to 100 press people, you know, the AP and the UP and foreign press and everybody. And then Robeson came in. Well, just standing there beside him, I, of course, felt better, and he just nailed them, you know. He really saved me. It was a scary, scary time, but I survived. And then we prepared for the next one, because Robeson said, that hadn't occurred to me. I just thought, God, we're all so lucky to get out of here. And when he said, I will sing, if the people want to hear me, I will sing, and I will sing again immediately.
Through the next week, people prepared for another concert, which was to be held near Peekskill the following Sunday. Fred was among those organized to go up and provide security. Men from the Abraham Lincoln Brigade of the Spanish Civil War provided protection for Robeson, and others, including vets and union members, ringed the concert area, standing shoulder to shoulder, arms locked. Fred was among those who went up to be part of the line.
We left about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. We got up there in the dark, and we hadn't slept. We were part of the guard. We were set up among the 1,500, mostly men, probably all men, who ringed the area where the concert was to be held. And as Jenny said, there were bats around, and we had soda bottles and rocks all in the grass, nothing obvious, but all ready for doing whatever was needed to defend the area and defend the people who were expected to come in. And I was with people from our theater group, and it was a calm, sunny day as the morning came on.